Welcome to episode 30 of Frank Reactions, the show where we help you profit from the internet through better customer experiences online and off. My name is Tamma Frank. Today's guest is Pat Flynn of Smart Passive Income. Pat has become one of the huge names in the internet marketing field, but he started in 2008 by being laid off from his job as an architect and has been one of the leaders of the movement towards greater transparency. The first month that he showed his income report, his earnings, was October 2008, where he earned $7,906.55 in revenue from his online marketing activities. And he's continued to report that every month, as well as reporting exactly what he's doing to earn the money. Last month's earnings were $123,853.51 per month. Think about that. He's been incredibly successful and at the same time has maintained a real focus on his family and being authentic. He is just such a sweet guy. You can't help but fall in love with him when you hear him or meet him. I first met him at New Media Expo a year ago, well, actually, I guess a year and a half ago now, and had asked him to appear on the show and he'd agreed, but we didn't quite manage to pull it off. When I re-met him this year and asked him again, I thought, oh, it's really exciting to get Pat, but I'm a little concerned because I'm no longer focusing strictly on online marketing. I'm all about customer experience now. So I was totally thrilled and I gotta say a bit relieved when it turned out that his keynote speech at this year's New Media Expo was in fact all about customer experience. In today's interview, he talks about what he sees as three core business fundamentals, principles that will provide value, and how modern technology is making it possible for companies to return to old, small-town, personalized customer care. This is important no matter what business you're in, even if you are sitting in your own house being a blogger or podcaster. About 23 minutes into the interview, I also switched gears and asked him how he sets priorities for his time, because I'm always fascinated by that and how people manage that. So he's got some great advice on that too. Also, if you want to hear more about productivity and priority setting, you might want to check out episode 84 of my previous show, The Frank Online Marketing Show, where I interviewed Mike Vardy. And you can find that at frankonlinemarketing.com/84_productivity. So let's get right into the interview with Pat, and I will chat with you briefly at the end.
Well, my name is Pat Flynn. I have a blog that a lot of people know me from at smartpassiveincome.com, but that's actually not how I got my start online. I got my start in the 2007-2008 era, and really after I got laid off from the architecture industry, which was my passion for a while until they let me go, I ended up building a business around helping people pass a certain exam that I had taken and passed in the architecture industry called the LEED exam. And that business did extremely well.
And you did that online?
I did that online, yes. And my layoff ended up becoming a huge blessing in disguise because just what happened afterwards in terms of not only just having a business of my own, being my own boss and making very decent money at the time, but it was more so the fact that I was now able to spend time doing other things because of the way that I had set everything up online to be able to provide value, to be able to sell products without having to do that and actually trade my time. I had invested a bunch of time up front and I had built these systems of automation to then serve an audience and sell products. And then, you know, I can literally wake up in the morning and have more products sold and have more money in my bank account, which I know sounds crazy, but it's totally possible now. And the coolest part about that was, I mean, I think the biggest difference for me was, you know, I had worked so hard in the architecture career that I was in, and yet I hardly got any recognition for it. You know, I was the draftsman and then I later became the job captain, and you know, I had a lot of responsibilities, but if you think about it, in the building that you're listening to this in right now, who built it? Who designed it? You probably have no idea.
True.
And even our own homes, the people who built the homes that we actually live in every single day, we don't know who was actually, you know, like, how do we give credit to that person? We can't. It's hard. But when I was doing this online business, teaching people this little exam in the architecture industry, people were emailing me and calling me by name saying, Patrick, Pat, thank you so much for helping me. And I was getting this immediate recognition and these incredible notes of thanks for that. And that's kind of when I decided that I was going to do this full time. And actually my job, my boss who let me go for my architecture job called me back about 6 or 7 months later. He started his own firm and he asked me to come back. He offered a full year's rent. He offered to pay for the move. He offered a more pay.
Wow.
And it was...
That must have been a tough decision.
No, actually, it was really interesting because I didn't think twice. It was very easy for me to say no, thank you.
Okay.
Because of the new direction I was in. Where if you had given me that offer a year before I was laid off, I would have been like, heck yeah, let's do that. Like, yeah. Easy. So it was pretty cool what the online space has been able to provide for me, but also has allowed me to do to provide for others as well.
I would love to get into more about this with you, but I'm going to try and stay focused here. Sure. So how many different products and, well, products do you sell online now in your various businesses?
Well, I would say there's about, I would say about a dozen right now. And it's funny that I don't even know the exact number right now, because new products are coming out every day. I mean, there's some major ones out there. There's one, for example, that helps people who are podcasters put a nice-looking player on their website. It's called the Smart Podcast Player, and that's been doing really well. That's been the big focus right now. I have a food truck website helping people helping people start a food truck and take...
Well, that's good to know, because my intern wants to do that when she moves back to France. I'll have to send her there.
So we built a product there to help people get off the ground with their food truck. And then now we're coming out with product number two, which is launching in a couple of weeks on, okay, you got your truck. How do you make sure you survive and thrive into the future? What else could you do? Catering and events and those sorts of things.
So how did you end up in the food truck business?
It's interesting because on my site at smartpassiveincome.com, I like to experiment with things. I like to call myself the crash test dummy. I'll put myself to the test and share the results. And those results are always a learning experience for others who are following along, and those results aren't always positive either. There's a lot of things that I don't know that I'm trying to figure out, and I like to share those results so people can learn from my wins and my failures.
Yeah.
And one of the things I love to do is build businesses from scratch on the site and just show people exactly step-by-step how I do it, what I wish I would have done differently, those sorts of things. I had done keyword research using a number of different tools that are available to us to see how many people are searching for different keywords and also what the competition is like for websites that serve people who search for those different keywords. And I found that the food truck industry was completely underserved. I mean, it's fairly new still. And there were no resources out there sharing and helping people who are wanting to help start a food truck or who have a food truck. And
so how long ago did you start that? Because, you know, I've over the years taken many of these courses, and it just seems so incredibly difficult to find niches that aren't already overserved.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, even if a niche is overserved, if you approach it correctly, if you position yourself in the right way, you can still come out at the top. I mean, when I got into the how to build an online business space, I was definitely not the first one. I mean, I was probably the millionth person to do it.
Yes.
But I was the first one to do it in certain ways. I was the first one to really do an income report every month. I was the first one to be very comfortable and open with my failures. And, you know, I'm also known for being very, you know, a family oriented, which a lot of people in this space don't necessarily share very much of. So that's my position, and that's how I was able to make a connection with people and stand out from everybody else out there.
Yeah.
But with the food truck one, yes, there wasn't very much competition. But that was also challenging because I didn't have anything to base what was working or what wasn't working off of. So everything was kind of just figured out along the way. And I took the approach of, you know, just figuring out what it would be like to be in the shoes of somebody who is just starting out and what information they would need.
Right.
And then just going to people who have that information and then sharing it. So interviews on podcasts or talking to health code people and people in office to figure out, okay, how are regulations going to go in the future in terms of, like, all the stuff that somebody who's just starting out would want to know.
So and putting yourself in your customer's shoes.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And that's not always easy to do. So a lot of times what I ended up doing and my team ended up doing was literally talking to people who are interested and just asking them questions, getting deep into their heads. Well, what other questions do you have? What do you need to know? How do you feel about this?
Mm-hmm.
And getting a lot of great information that could direct the direction that I could take to help better serve them.
Interesting. So you do have these products now. And when you spoke at New Media Expo, I guess about a month ago or a little less, I was really intrigued because, of course, there you're talking to an audience of bloggers and podcasters, and a lot of them are solopreneurs. And you come in very dramatic style, I must say, that you come in and give a talk that is all about the customer and serving your customers better. What inspired you to take that angle with that talk? Because it's not what one would have expected there.
Yeah, I mean, it's New Media Expo, so everybody expects something about either blogging or podcasting or social media or something like that. But I think what it all comes down to is always, you know, even with blogging, social media, and videos and podcasting, it's always about the person on the other end.
Yep.
And there's some certain principles that have held true over time for businesses and companies and people and brands that have been successful. And that's what I wanted to talk about, sort of bringing it to a more, you know, these are the core foundational items that we all need to have, no matter what you end up doing and how you end up doing it. These are the things that have to happen. This is how it was done in the past. This is how it's being done right now and what's working right now. And let's maybe think ahead and see what we could do in the future to uphold those core values.
So let's talk about that. What are these core things that you feel are so essential?
Sure. Well, the first one is this principle of the fact that people want convenience. And
right.
Convenience is very important, especially nowadays. We think of all the things that have been built for us as far as convenience. But even back in the day, and you remember me talking about sliced bread.
Yeah.
That was such an original thing back then, which now we just take it for granted.
Yeah.
So back then, you know, I like to call it the era of availability. That's what was convenient. When things became available that helped us save time and effort, that was what was convenient. Now, it's not only that. Now we want things instantly.
Yes.
You know, it's available and it's helpful, but if it takes too much time, it's not that convenient. So that's why there are things like Google where we can search for something and it literally tells you you found these results in 0.000164 seconds, right?
Yes.
And then there's Uber, which can get us a person to drive us anywhere in a minute or two just mm-hmm. based off of this app. And, you know, podcasting versus radio and then on-demand television and movies versus what it used to be like Blockbuster or cable television.
Yep.
And there's all these things coming out now that make things happen now.
Mm-hmm.
And then looking into the future, I was kind of thinking of, well, what is on the high level of convenience and what could it look like in the future? And for me, it was this idea of, you know, people taking initiative to not only have people tell you what they want now, but almost predicting what they would want
mm-hmm.
before they even know it.
Yep.
And we see a little bit of that in big companies like Amazon, which use algorithms and stuff and search queries and histories to see what our interests are. And, you know, you're on Facebook and you might see an ad and you're like, wow, how did this get here? Because this is exactly what I needed. Or how did they know that I'm interested in this? Well, they know, which is, I mean, it's a little scary at this point.
Yeah, like the pregnant girl who found out, what was it, from... Oh, there was a company
that contacted her
before she had told anyone or before she even knew herself that she was pregnant.
Yeah, that's insane.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a line, obviously. But
of course.
The fact is you're trying to predict what somebody else might want. And if you can give it to them before they even ask, it's gonna totally raise the authority of your brand and just make that connection even stronger.
Yeah.
And I talked about a company that had helped me with my styling and dressing. There's a company called Trunk Club out there that you can actually talk over the phone to a stylist, and they
mm-hmm.
will kind of ask you a bunch of questions on what your goals are, what are you looking for, what styles do you like, and they send you a trunk full of clothes. You get to keep what you want. You pay for that. You send everything back, free shipping. It's pretty cool.
Yes.
But my stylist, Mary, she had done some research. She had known that I was doing some public speaking. I guess she saw on Twitter or on my website or something. I didn't know she was doing that, but she knew that I was going to a bunch of conferences, and she sent me a message that said, hey, Pat, I got a trunk for you full of clothes that would make you look great on stage. I know you're speaking at conferences soon. And
wow.
I was like, wow, you just took a few extra minutes even to really pay attention to what I needed.
Yes.
Even before I needed it, I knew I needed it. And that was super cool of her. And, you know, I loved that example in the presentation.
Yeah, and I mean, it's such an extreme example of the personalization and the customer service touches that make people into incredibly loyal, devoted customers.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, we used to get that in some of the higher end stores. I remember my mother talking about, you know, in the old days, some of the stores where they sold ladies' clothes, but expensive ones. And the stylist would actually call them to let them know something new had come in that was specific to them. Not that, you know, we've got a new shipment of these products in. It's that I've got this dress in that would totally be right for you.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess now with technology, we're getting more capabilities of doing that. But from the example you've given, the personal touch is also really important still.
Oh, yeah, it's absolutely huge. That's sort of the first principle, yeah. The convenience thing. Do you mind if I keep going with
I was
the
just
other
about
ones?
To ask you.
Oh, good. Good. See, I knew what you needed before you math. I'm just kidding.
Back to the future, yeah.
Okay. Principle number two that I talked about was this idea that just people want to be heard.
Yeah.
And back in the past, it was they wanted the ability to say something in some way. That's why these suggestion boxes that you see everywhere, which we still see every once in a while, but we all know what happens when you put suggestion in there. Nothing ever, right. Like hardly. But now there's this expectation of similar to what it was in the example I talked about before, people wanting things now, people expect a response now. So not only do they want to be heard, they want to know that they've been heard and also want to hear back from you.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of interesting statistics. 42% of people who use social media expect a response within an hour. On Twitter, that goes up to 72%.
Whoosh.
So if you have a complaint and you send it out to – and you at tag that company on Twitter, like 3 out of every 4 people expect a reply within an hour, which is crazy.
And it's interesting because we just did a study and of 104 companies that sold online had Twitter accounts, and a third of them never even answered.
Oh, gosh.
After 2 weeks.
Lost opportunities.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so that's your point too then, is the need to be heard and immediacy of response. Mm-hmm.
And now, in a similar way, kind of what I expect in the future is this, what I like to call the what's up. So instead of waiting for people to complain or waiting for people to come to you, if you're the company or the brand, it's you reaching out to your people and saying, hey, what's up? Like, how are you doing? Is everything cool? Is there anything I can help you with? And that, in that sort of unexpected surprise sort of way. And it's those random little surprises that go a really, really long way. And I always tell this story of, like, you know, if you imagine you and your spouse, and you know, you say I love you to each other every single night before you go to bed, it becomes this like expected thing, mm-hmm. right? Where if you don't say it, then it becomes weird at that point. But it's like, it, not that it loses meaning, but it just becomes regular.
Mm-hmm.
And it's expected. It's not much of a surprise anymore. But it's that kind of, if you were to like visit your spouse in his or her office at 3:48 on a random Tuesday for no reason and just gave him like a flower or some treat or food mm-hmm. or something, that's cool. Like, that's what's remembered. That's what people will talk about. You know, your office mates are going to be like, wow, that was so nice of your husband mm-hmm. or wife. Like, wow, I wish I had a wife or husband like that, right?
Yeah.
So that's what you could do as a brand. You reach out to people without them even expecting it. And you just say, hey, can I take care of you in any way? You can be sure that that person is going to remember that and it's going to spread word about you and your brand.
Now, I wonder, though, because there's a bit of a fine line there in the sense that a lot of us who've worked in corporate life have been pestered by calls from salespeople who are trying in this generic kind of way to say, yeah, like, what's up? What can I do for you? When just calling to check in. And of course, when you're really busy, you don't want someone calling just to check in.
Yeah.
So how do they, you know, how do you draw that line?
Well, the cool thing about the technology we have available today is that people can answer back if they choose to do so.
Right.
A call is still considered pretty invasive,
you know,
like especially if it's 6 p.m. and the whole family's eating dinner and then you get a call.
Yeah.
We hate that, right?
So, yeah.
So you don't want yes, you're absolutely right. There is a line and you don't want to cross that line, but you can offer an email or just even a tweet. You know, a tweet is not invasive because
right.
people are reading their tweets when they want to read their tweets.
Right.
So using that as a method is great. And yes, you might not be able to do it to everybody, especially if you have a big audience, but you know, it doesn't take much to kind of get things moving for you and your brand.
Well, and I wonder too, you know, your comment about doing things, you know, on a nightly basis, saying I love you or whatever. A lot of brands now will send out birthday greetings, but I wonder if that's almost becoming too cliche and if they should do what my mother used to do, which was have unbirthday presents.
Oh, that's so good. Yeah, I think every company could benefit from at least experimenting with that.
Yeah.
You know, hey, here's a free coupon for you just because, actually for no reason.
Yeah.
That's it, you know.
Happy end birthday.
Yeah, exactly. I love that. Or maybe it's like your 6 month, it's like the day in between, or your 100-day anniversary of something.
Yeah, actually.
You know, that was always that was always the big one in high school. Like all the kids would celebrate their 100-day
mm-hmm.
anniversary with their boyfriend and girlfriend. And I always thought that was weird, but you know, people love those numbers. So
anyway. Right. And what was the next thing then?
So the last sort of principle, the three, and then at the end, I ended up talking about what I like to call feature traps, which we could get into. But the principle number three was people want to be loved. Mm-hmm. People just want to be loved. They want to feel like they're a part of a group. They want to know that other people appreciate them. And in the past, it was this sort of automated appreciation, I feel, where, you know, you'd see thank yous on receipts or on the checkout stand or on a grocery bag.
Yeah.
But, like, they wouldn't care to learn about you or learn your name or do anything beyond just what was already kind of done automatically.
Yeah.
But now, you know, what's working really well are these personalized appreciations. You know, sometimes, you know, now the handwritten note is actually sort of a rare commodity now.
And that's right.
It makes a really big impression on somebody when somebody's taken the time to actually handwrite something. And even if it's not handwritten, just a note in the snail mail, like,
mm-hmm.
most of snail mail now is junk mail.
Yep.
Or bills, unfortunately. But if there's that one card from your brand that it's just somebody, hey, thank you for working with us the other day when you ordered consulting from us, like, we just wanted to say we appreciate you. Like, that goes a super long way, and it doesn't take very long
right.
to do that. And then the sort of level above that, sort of the future of that, it was sort of taking that to the next level by doing it in a public form of some kind, like recognizing the people in your audience for certain things that they've done, perhaps, and thanking them individually, just for being who they are. And even though you're thanking one person at a time, because it's public, everybody else sees that. They can relate to that person. They can put themselves in their shoes. You know, the mirror neurons in our brains fire off, and we have this immediate appreciation for somebody who's thanking somebody else.
Right. Yeah, so, exactly.
And then kind of how I tied this all together in the presentation, for those of you listening, I did a Back to the Future themed presentation. And
I'll put up the link to it because I noticed that you've sent that out now.
Oh, yes. I have episode 13 of SPI TV, it's the full presentation. And then I kind of put all these things together because really when you think about it, it's actually going back to what really the past was about, what worked in the past, small town rules, as mm-hmm. Gary Vaynerchuk always says, you know, where everybody knows their name, everybody shops at Frank's butcher shop because they know Frank and Frank knows you, as
yeah.
opposed to the grocery store where it's just kind of, even though you can get things for cheap, it's you don't know who that person is behind, you know, cutting the meat, but you know Frank and his family knows you and you hang out, so you're willing to go the extra mile, pay a little bit more for him. And those are the types of rules that are working now. So even though we're going into the future, we're kind of going back to what worked in the past to survive, which mm-hmm. is kind of cool.
So what made you think that all these bloggers and podcasters would be interested in this as a topic?
You know, I think this is something that everybody, you know, bloggers, podcasters, it's all about taking care of your people and building an audience. And, you know, a lot of the people who are in the audience eventually want to get to a point where they're, you know, creating a brand that sells something or offers a service or product of some kind. So it was thinking about their future, what would be most helpful for them, and making sure I tag them now with these foundational items, with these core values before they kind of move on and maybe go in a direction that they shouldn't go down.
So the interesting thing then is how this gets translated with larger organizations, because the kind of personal interaction that you're talking about becomes much more challenging when you've got a million customers.
True, but there are systems in place now that enable us to really get in contact with individuals. There's a you might remember when I talked about KLM, at KLM on Twitter, Royal Dutch Airlines.
Yeah.
And they have over 1.7 million Twitter followers. And right at the top of their Twitter page says, question or request, we expect to reply within X number of minutes. And they update that cover art on Twitter every 5 minutes.
Yeah, I thought that was lovely.
Isn't that so cool? Like, they are sharing how much time they would take to respond to you if you ask them a question on Twitter. It's so incredible. Like, I and not only when I actually tested them and I shared some of the back and forth between myself
yeah.
and KLM,
yeah.
But then not only do they set that expectation, which is under the hour, they said 33 minutes, at least at the time that I did this experiment,
mm-hmm.
but they got back to me in, I think, 11 minutes. So they blew me, they set my expectations, and I was like, great, 33 minutes, fine. 11 minutes later, my mm-hmm. mind was blown, you know, and I'm talking to an individual, and they're talking to me not in a very generic way, but in a very conversational way.
Mm-hmm.
They were saying things like, hey, Pat, we would say, I had asked, like, I had never been to the Netherlands, when is the best time of the year to go? And they were like, we would say the summer, Pat, they use my name.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, the Amsterdam channels are very charming in the winter, too, with all the pretty lights. What do you want to do here? They asked me a question. Like, they could have just been done with me,
yeah.
But they asked me a question, and we kept going back and forth for a little bit. And yes, they have a team involved that is solely for the purposes of responding to people's questions. But man, it's making a big impact, and it might be worth having a few dedicated members on your team to be this kind of person to the people who are under your brand?
Well, I think that's the thing. It's about thinking sort of long-term customer building instead of instant problem solution only.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you see this stuff translating into your business and the people you work with?
Well, for me, I mean, I'm always trying to think ahead and, you know, always trying to understand as technology advances, you know, what I could do to make sure I guess you could say enhance what I'm already doing, you know, because I'm trying to make things more convenient for people. I'm trying to make things, you know, trying to take initiative, trying to allow people to be heard by opening up conversations, trying to respond quicker, trying to make sure people feel like they're a part of a group,
mm-hmm.
and utilizing the new technologies that are coming out with those principles in mind to see how I might be able to do those things even better or more efficiently. And that's kind of how I've been, you know, progressing and trying to make sure that I stay at the forefront of everything that's happening in business right now.
Mm-hmm. So I have a question for you that's not directly related to customer experience, but I'd love to ask this of people like you who are clearly so productive and successful. And that is, how do you personally set your priorities? Because there've got to be way more things you want to get done in a day than you can possibly do.
Oh yeah. even in 10 years, because I have big plans, but you know, you got to take one step at a time, and it's really about honing in on what's that next project you're going to work on, mm-hmm. and what's most important to you and what would make the biggest impact. It's that first domino and that series of dominoes that you're creating for the future. I picked up that analogy from the book called The One Thing by Gary Keller and Jay Papasan.
Yeah.
You know, they talk about this thing called the domino effect where, you know, if you just find out that first step, that perfect first step or that next thing you have to do, it could lead to all these amazing things that'll happen in the future. It's sort of taking that 80-20 rule to the next level. And they have this really cool thing where actually just recently, I don't know if you know this, but there was a world record set on the amount of dominoes that were knocked over.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Somebody set up 9 million dominoes.
Wow.
And when you think about that, I mean, that's crazy, just first of all, to set up that. I wonder how long that took.
Yeah, but I was thinking that too.
You know, like, I don't know if that was like years or something, or I don't know. Or if you kind of messed up in the middle, like mm-hmm. 4.5 million, no. but it, like, if you have set up all those 9 million dominoes and you just, with a little flick of that first one, that little burst of energy from your finger,
mm-hmm.
all that joules of energy going around and that impact that could have. And the other cool example they use in the book is a domino can actually knock over a domino that's 1.5 times its own size. So you can actually increase the size of the dominoes. And if you were to increase that size in that manner, starting with a 2-inch domino, the 73rd domino will reach from the Earth to the Moon.
That's all it takes, is 73.
Yeah, it's because, you know, exponential compounding and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But just that little 2-inch domino would crush that. Obviously, you know, realistically, that would never happen, and, you know, whatever, there'd be like tidal waves and people would die and we wouldn't want that to happen. But point being, you just got to find out what that first domino is. And so I spend a lot of time, going back to your original question, really focusing on where my time has to be spent. Because mm-hmm. a lot of people, you know this, they stay busy. They're probably a lot busier than I am, but are they working on the right things? A lot of times not. They're just staying busy to stay busy. And they don't take a few moments in the beginning to understand, okay, what would make the biggest difference in what I'm trying to achieve.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why the projects are important. But within those projects, what is that next task within that project that needs to be done? And then what helps me is, because there's a lot of great content out there in this world right now that can help with anybody in any sort of form of business, but it can also be overwhelming and there could be also overload. And so what I like to do is what I like to call just-in-time learning, where in that next project, in that next task within that next project, if anything that comes my way has nothing to do with that, if it's not going to help me complete that next task, I put it away for later. I don't even read it. I don't even learn about it. I mean, I use Evernote to organize the things that come my way that I don't need right now.
Mm-hmm.
I have like 40 articles on Pinterest that I'm going to read someday when I'm at that point in my time in my business where Pinterest is of interest to me. But right now it's not, so I don't even need to worry about it. And I need to worry about, okay, what can help me finish this next task? And that's it. And that has helped me clear my head. It has helped me clear who I speak to, who I get help from, who I get coaching from. It helps me figure out what books to read. It helps me in so many different ways, and it helps take away all those clouds in my head and really focus on that thing I need to be focusing on.
That's amazing. What I love about you as a role model is that you do show your commitment to family as being a really important thing too. And that is so nice to see.
That is my number one priority, and why I think it's so important to spend a little bit more time up front to prioritize and to figure things out in terms of what I'm going to do and why. Because I feel like every minute I waste in my business is a minute that I waste taken away from my family and my kids, you know?
Absolutely.
So that's kind of my approach. And I've sort of built my businesses around being able to spend more time with them. I do a lot of my work either early in the morning before they wake up or after they go to bed at night. Mm-hmm. And, I found that in terms of at least productivity strategies, I can get more done in 2 hours at night after they go to bed than trying to cram 6 hours of work in during the day when they're awake. So I don't even try to fight it. I roll with what's working and what I want to do.
Yeah. That makes total sense. Having worked through having two young children and running my own business, I totally understand that. You get a lot more done and you feel a lot more satisfaction both when you're with your kids and when you're with your work if you can focus on one or the other at the time.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Is there anything else you wish I'd asked you that I haven't?
No, I mean, I want to help out your audience as much as I can. So if anything comes to mind for those of you listening, feel free to reach out to me. You can find me at Pat Flynn on Twitter. I'd love to know that you listen to this and curious to know how you feel about the content. I'm always happy to share. And again, this was a brand new presentation I put together for NMX. So I'm really happy to talk about it because I want to use it as much as I can. I built it in such a way that it would be very relevant to all different kinds of people, going back to kind of what you originally mentioned.
Yes.
Of how it can apply to bloggers. Well, I feel like it can apply to anyone. And part of my strategy here was to create something that people could not only, you know, from bloggers, yes, podcasters, yes, to solopreneurs, yes, to corporate America, yes, to dads sharing principles with their five-year-old kids.
You know, it's interesting because I was just at a couple of corporate conferences, one on B2B online and the other on e-retail, and they're all talking about predictive analytics and predictive marketing, which comes back to your first point.
That's cool.
Yeah. The challenge, of course, is how the heck do you implement it?
All right.
Well, thank you so much. I really value and appreciate your time.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks. When I had my two children, I was self-employed, initially working on my first book, Canada's Best Employers for Women, A Guide for Job Hunters, Employees, and Employers. I realized that as a working mother, you always feel guilt. When you're with your kids, you feel guilty that you're not giving your business enough attention. When you're focused on your business, you feel you're not giving your kids enough attention. So it really resonated with me when Pat said, "Every minute I waste in my business is a minute I waste and take away from my family." I totally get that feeling. So my thought to you is be sure you use your time wisely. I've put a link to Pat's wonderful New Media Expo talk in the show notes, as well as links to some really cool domino videos that prove that he was correct when he talked about a domino being able to knock over something 1.5 times its size. If you've reached this point in the recording, I am thrilled to discover that you consider part of using your time wisely is listening to the Frank Reactions podcast. And if you think it would be a good use of time for others, it would be truly wonderful if you would share the links to the show with your friends or colleagues, and if you would take a moment to go over to iTunes or Stitcher and leave a review for the show, because that helps other people discover it. As always, I would love to get your feedback on this episode or the show in general, and your ideas for people you'd like me to interview. You can always reach me by email, TEMASINMarketingA@frankreactions.com. or on Twitter at Tema Frank, or by telephone 1-866-544-9262. That's all for now. Have a wonderful week.